Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Back to the Tennis Connected Studios for September 11th, 2019. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to review the U.S. Open. Let's introduce our co-host for this week, Parsa Sammy. How are you, my friend?
Very well. What's going on?
Everything's great, man. You know, it's another year of the Grand Slam calendar has been completed. Canada has a new champion. Hopefully, finally, Parsa, you're a believer. I remember last Monday you weren't so keen on picking Andreescu to win the tournament, but I was. At least she was in my top two, and I got those two right, which is good. And then obviously we had that very entertaining men's final where Daniil Medvedev really proved himself and, you know, came out of the woodwork and just came back from two sets of love down and almost beat Rafa Nadal and prevented him from winning his 19th major and fourth U.S. Open. So we got a lot to talk about today before we also preview the fall calendar. So Parsa, what were some of your impressions? Let's start off with the women. I mean, Andreescu, definitely a player for the future. She's coming in. I mean, she took care of Serena handily for the most part. I mean, Serena mounted that comeback down 5-1 in the second set, but Andreescu still managed to pull it out 7-5 over there. But I think, as you spoke about before we got on air, Serena's first serve percentage was terrible. We had some different thoughts about that. Yes, obviously, you know, she's not 25 anymore. Obviously, you know, she needs to be in slightly better shape. She has the experience. She's been now to four finals post, you know, having a child, which we all recognize and understand that is very difficult. There's no issues there. But the thing is that she continues to lose these finals, I believe now to Kerber, to Osaka, and now to Andreescu. I forget who the other one was. But so nevertheless, you know, she's in a position where, you know, she's still that elusive 24th major is still out there. Hopefully she can grab it in Australia. But what were your overall thoughts on the match from both sides?
You know, first off, it was a brilliant performance by Andreescu. I felt like the whole year, the whole summer, she was the best player in the world, and she proved it by obviously winning the U.S. Open. She's not only the player of the future, but she is the current player. And the one with, you know, the greatest, you know, upside, and she's in form as of right now. You know, I didn't think it was Serena's best performance. And although there are differing opinions on why and this and that, I just think certain things need to happen now. And, for Serena, and Serena's not the same champion she was. She can't play at 85% and, you know, of her ability and win these matches anymore. Andreescu's way too good, way too smart, and knew how to pick on what she needed to pick on in order to get what she wanted from Serena. And so that's a real testament to what a great player, a great young player Andreescu is. And, you know, just quite impressed by the way she put it all together, especially up 5-1 and Serena charging hard and coming back and, you know, sort of being able to settle down and really stop the bleeding, and not only that, take the championship. It was really, really an impressive thing to watch, and you know, many kudos to her on her performance and on what she is destined to bring to the WTA Tour. Hopefully, as a consistent, dominant player that we thought a bunch of the other younger WTA stars would be like. So far we've had a revolving door. You know, the consistency has been Serena Williams in the final losing. Other than that, we've had a revolving door of champions. And so hopefully we can get, you know, a little bit more consistency, which brings up a good question for you, Nima. You know, do you like the parody of the a new champion almost, you know, every slam, or do you would you rather have the super megastar, the Maria Sharapovas and the glitz and the glamour and the Serena Williams when she was on top and all those different kinds of things? You know, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think, so this is what, and then Halep also beat, you know, remember she tuned Serena in the finals of Wimbledon in the summertime. So that's 2-2, right? So she's getting pretty, I don't think she's won a set in these matches, if I'm not mistaken, right? Halep beat her straights, Andreescu beat her straights, I know Osaka beat her straights, and I think Kerber beat her straights too at the Wimbledon final. So she's like, if I apologize, I don't have the thing, the stats in front of me, the results, but just going off of memory, if that's 8 sets in a row played in the last 4 Grand Slam finals, it's proven a couple things, that she's good enough to get there because, I mean, she's torched pretty much everybody else in the field, Serena getting there, but then she's getting, and she's just losing to that one player who's just, you know, a little bit better, right? So I think, excuse me, I think what this comes down to is that she just has to, I don't know what else she can do at this point. Can she serve better? Absolutely. Can she get fitter? Absolutely. But Andreescu is only getting better. Osaka is only getting better. Halep is still pretty much in her prime. I mean, Muguruza is probably going to have a little bit of a comeback. There's players out there. Bencic is playing better. Svitolina, honestly, I'm not a big fan of anymore after what I saw from her in the semis. I just don't think she's got the firepower to win a Grand Slam. And I don't think Bencic has the mentality yet, but she could maybe do it if she gets that together. But she's a bit of a hothead. And Andreescu right now, she's got everything. She's got the return. She's got the serve. Amazing forehand. She moves well. She believes. She meditates. She you know, she visualizes the success that she's having. And, I mean, beyond her years, I think she's you know, mature enough that she can keep this going. I think she's definitely top 2-3 favorites to win the Australian Open. I think that's another great surface for her. I think clay can be a good surface for her. I'm not sure on grass yet. We've got to see that, but she's a good enough athlete that she could probably do some damage there. She's not that tall either, right? She's about 5'7", or almost 5'7", so she's got a good center of gravity. But from on the women's side, I mean, obviously there's a lot of taller women too, but she can still crack that serve. How many break points down was she? And she would just hit an ace or a service winner. So, I mean, she's got, to me, she's got everything. Like, have we seen it, even like with Osaka last year, we saw Osaka come in and, you know, like kind of like a deer in the headlights, but just, you know, smash everything and do it, amazing job. But then the demeanor wasn't really there. You saw this young, you know, very shy, marketable girl, but, and now kind of, she's kind of like, she's subdued now, and that pressure, is, in my opinion, has got to her, even though she got the Australian Open. She hasn't done really anything since then. But Andreescu, her personality is different. She's much feistier. She's much more engaging. She doesn't seem introverted at all to me. So I think these things really bode well for her as she moves forward and tries to continue to dominate on the scene. And that's, you know, that's what I think about her. But at Serena, for me, is a question mark. I really don't, I cannot tell you right now if she's going to get that 24th major, because it's not getting any easier. I think her 38th birthday is coming up. By the time Australia comes around, that's another 3-4 months from now. So who knows? What are your ultimate thoughts on that?
I think she's definitely showing her age. It's not something that was. I still believe she's a little, you know, too, you know, not fit enough, I guess is the right word. And that hurts in that particular match in the final. Andreescu did a great job of pressuring her second serve, and Serena felt the pressure on her first serve to put it in, and I think that contributed to her decline in first serve percentage. At the same time, in the past, when she could move very, very well, she could return those blistering returns that were coming back off her second serve and eke out a few more points, and the winning percentage on the second serve would be higher. And so she's not showing the ability to defend as well, which is very... they go hand in hand with age, you know, just like you see Federer on the men's side. He just really can't defend that well compared to the 23-year-olds out there. So the solution, as it is with Federer as well, if you can solve their unbelievable and incredible and amazing game plan A, the game plan B at an older age almost doesn't exist. And it's just not, it exists, but it doesn't exist at a number one, number two type level in the world. And it seems apparent to me with both Federer and now Serena that that age is finally becoming a factor. And although I'm sure behind the scenes it's already been a factor, it really hasn't shown itself on the court yet. But I think it's starting to show on certain surfaces. It makes a difference. And the hard court is definitely one. And with all the changing conditions at the U.S. Open, I think with all that variance and that you see the differences in the age and the adaptability and the flexibility in their games. You know, when I'm talking about adaptability and flexibility, I'm not talking about where to hit the ball, but I'm talking more about, okay, the court conditions are faster, my serve is going to matter more here, or the court conditions are slower, I'm going to have to use my wheels a little bit, my feet a little bit more. And when you're younger, you can adapt subtly your game to the conditions, whereas when you're older, if you remember Federer, let's say earlier in the tournament, the conditions were super slow, he's just shanking balls everywhere, very hard for him to adapt. And until he really got a stranglehold on the rhythm and the feel, you know, he finally was able to lock in his game there. And I think the same thing is happening with Serena. She has someone who was changing pace and changing location and blistering second serve returns, and she just didn't have enough in the well to counteract it. Does that make sense, Nima?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, we'll see. I think, look, at the end of the day, you know, Serena's going to keep going. Because no matter what she says, she's trying to win Grand Slams. She's trying to win Grand Slams for a reason, right? Because she wants to get the record, which is totally understandable and totally acceptable, and it's something she should do, to be honest with you. But it's just not easy anymore, and it's not going to get any easier, right? Traveling all around the world, you have a baby, you know, it's a tough situation. There's no question about it, and I just think that. I mean, I thought she was going to put up definitely a better performance, but Andreescu's game kind of matches up well with her because she can handle, you know, her ground strokes. She hits a big, like, massive forehand. Her returns are really good, and she serves well. I mean, nobody's going to have as good of a serve as Serena maybe ever again, just because her serve, to me, is number one ever. Maybe overall, technique-wise, is so smooth, but definitely on the women's side. And I just think that it's a good matchup as well for Andreescu, believe it or not. But I think as another side note here is this is a great thing for tennis in Canada. We had major high ratings. I mean, obviously hockey is a big sport here, and the U.S. Open final got more ratings than the Stanley Cup final, which is incredible. Incredible. If you include both, you know, French speaking and English speaking, because of, you know, Quebec, Montreal, as well as the rest of Canada. So. I think that's fantastic news, but we'll see what happens. I mean, I think that this is definitely going to do a lot for tennis in the country. I mean, the more Andreescu gets out there, and, you know, she's, because what happens now is Nike's going to push her more, and, you know, racket companies, you're going to probably see her with a watch deal soon, and, you know, different manufacturers all around the world are going to be jumping on the bandwagon, and that's just going to add to her whole thing, right? To her whole branding and her aura, and that's only good for her as well as tennis in the country, because they're going to associate her with Canada, and then that's going to be a good vibe for the country. So we'll see what happens, but at the end of the day, it's still a winter country, and as a result of that, it will stay a niche sport here. Tennis is still a niche sport, in my opinion. I don't care what anybody says, but that doesn't mean that it can't get bigger and more popular. So, you know, as we close the book on that, the women's side, which was very, you know, obviously good news for everybody in this country, we turn to the men's side, where Rafa Nadal Parsa captured his fourth U.S. Open title in the last 10 years, beat Daniil Medvedev in an interesting five-setter. Not necessarily, like we were saying, the quality maybe wasn't the best. That third and fourth set, I think Medvedev played off the hook. I mean, the guy was just cranking everything. But it was fun. It was entertaining, no question about it. Let's leave it at that. But we got a lot to talk about here, and for Rafa. I mean, what did you think of the match overall? Give us your thoughts, because I know you're pretty excited about that one. And where this ranks for you as matches of the year to date.
I mean, it matches the year. I'm not really certain. It's definitely not better than the Wimbledon final, but it just was. It was nice to see a new face in there playing against the old guard, and the old guard. You know, what you really appreciate with Nadal is the warrior mentality. You appreciate the effort. You appreciate the tenacity, the discipline. At the same time, the humbleness where, you know, he's up two sets and a break in the third. And if you listen to his post-match conference, it's basically like he didn't even think like that. He didn't even think he was ahead. He was just trying to survive the whole way through. And that gives you an idea of the level of Medvedev and the fear and the danger of him and his game. And I just thought it was a very interesting mix there. And, you know, and knowing that earlier in the tournament, Medvedev was, you know, flipping the bird to the New York crowd, and then it became endearing. There were just so many storylines. And then, you know, being on a Sunday, you know, evening, and, you know, I think a lot of people were watching all over the place. And
his runner-up speech was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, the energy was unbelievable. Everything was just, you know, and the people, the casual fans and the people who messaged me, I mean, they were, you know, just through the moon and exhilarated by the entire thing. And you know, and even at the ends, you know, the break point to go to 5-5 in the fifth. I mean, it was unbelievable drama back and forth and back and forth.
Yes.
And Medvedev seemingly wouldn't go away. You know, was it the best tennis? I don't know. It wasn't the greatest level of tennis I've ever seen, for sure. But it was an interesting contrast in style and excellent, excellent, excellent entertainment value, which is what the New York crowd demands.
Yeah, and so for me, a couple standout points were, you know, Rafa Nadal's versatility. I mean, here's a guy who has, you know, what people don't talk about is like, oh, he's like, it's amazing how one set of accomplishments, which is outstanding and will pretty much, I think, will last our lifetime at least, if not for at least another 100 years, a guy winning 12 of the same tournament at the French Open overshadows everything else that he does. So this guy has 19 Grand Slams. Okay, even if he had won 19 French Opens, that's still incredible. But he also has 2 Wimbledons, he has 4 US Opens, and he has 1 Australian Open, and he's made the Australian Open final, I think, 4 other times. He's made a couple other US Open finals, and he's made 3 other Wimbledon finals. I mean, this is a guy who is without a doubt a player of all surfaces. What is anybody talking about? These people are crazy that are saying this stuff on Twitter, this and that. I mean, this guy's won 4 US Opens. I don't care what the field has been. I don't care what's, like, he still has to win the tournament, right? If he, why isn't somebody else winning the tournament? If the, you know what I'm saying? So the whole point is that it's the question, you know, the point here is that his, you know, you saw him, for me, what won him this match was obviously his mentality, which is incredible, but he started serving volleying a little bit, right? Because Medvedev was a little bit stubborn, and he was, you know, he remained in a very deep court positioning on the returns, and Rafa would serve out wide, come and hit that backhand slice cross court. So he was winning a few points in that, and then he would obviously hit his forehand. But I mean, Medvedev, I mean, the guy is just a warrior. You know, Parsa, it was amazing. I was watching, like, the beginning of the match, and the guy's, like, rope-a-doping with Nadal, you know, one game all in the first set, and I'm like, is this how this guy wants to win this match? He wants to outlast Nadal. And lo and behold, if you fast forward it to the 4 hour and 50 minute mark, 1 minute shy of the match ending, did the guy look like he was sweating? Did the guy look like his shirt was drenched? He looked honestly, he looked better than Nadal from a physical perspective, if we're being honest here. The guy
helps that, Nima.
Sorry?
3 years old helps that.
Absolutely. But so he's 23 years old. But look at, I mean, how fit is this guy? Irrespective of age, Kyrgios is also young too, but he's not as fit as this. I mean, this guy has worked on his fitness. We got to give him a major shout out for that. Mentally very strong, very serene, very cerebral. Just getting no real emotions. I mean, he's coming back from 2 sets of love down. He's cranking his serve. He's got that Gumby arm. You know, very unorthodox technique on the forehand especially, but he's still pulling it off. And he's interesting. And like I said, more than anything, he's proved himself to have this really quirky, you know, kind of, I don't know, schoolboy, but then villain. He's got all over the place. Very layered personality, right? That I think has become now very endearing to a lot of tennis fans around the world because a lot of people watch this match. So, which is fantastic for this sport. And I think that, I don't know if this, how many slams this guy's going to win or what's going to happen, because his game is not like it's all over the place, right? So with that type of game, you know, like when Federer was in his prime, he'd have that serve, first shot forehand, chip back that return. Roddick would have problems with it, and Ljubicic and all of these, Safin and all of these younger guys. And then he had Agassi a little bit at the beginning, and then he went to Rafa and Djokovic. And it was the same. Like, he's developed himself, but he had this core game style. You know, Nadal had that lefty out wide attack, Federer's backhand, hit as many forehands as possible. Djokovic, the returns. This guy's kind of all over the place, right? He's got that, the drop shots, and then he hits these off-pace balls, and then he does two-handed backhand swinging volleys, and then, you know, he hits 120-mile-an-hour second serves. So is this just based on a really, he's in a good place, and so he's playing exceptional tennis? Or can this last? You know what I'm saying? So that's, to me, is a bit of an X factor. Definitely he's going to be around, right? But it's, does he, because he's had an amazing year. Come 2020, I mean, listen, you got a lot of points to defend, buddy. So you got to get ready for that. But what does he do to sustain this level? If you were his coaching staff, and his coaching staff, what would you suggest to him? You know, like, okay, so we're here now. Got to finish off the year. We're in London. What do we do to get better for 2020?
I mean, I definitely think that, you know, he has to bring just one more addition to his game. And I think that's attacking with the volley a little bit more, and being able to back up his serve with some sort of aggressiveness on the second and third balls following subsequently. I think that's probably where he's got the most room to improve. You obviously see his lockdown mode. You see his firepower. You see both of those extremes, but sort of what's in the middle there? You know, where are his set patterns in what he's doing and how he attacks to bring him to really multidimensional tennis and being able to beat people in all different sorts of ways, as you saw Nadal doing in the final. And as you pointed out, you know, because he was so far back, he started to serve and volley. Nadal started to serve and volley, and that's what I'm talking about. That's a different dimension, and not something that, you know, Nadal necessarily does, but is willing to do. And Medvedev, I feel like, you know, needed to be a little bit more sure of his offensive game. And that's where his age showed a little bit. If you notice that match, everything was from behind when he was playing really, really at an exceptional level. When he was ahead, it wasn't the same level. And it was very hard for him to pull away or even to break through, to break even. So that's just a fact. And the reasoning is the big points are being played better by the guy who has 19 Grand Slams. You know, I think that ultimately makes a difference. And I think through that experience and through his experiences of matches, he will learn even more to pick things a little bit better. Just earlier, you brought up a comparison to Kyrgios. I mean, you can't really compare the two. Kyrgios is, you know, doesn't train as much. He's relies a significantly amount more on his talent than does Medvedev. And so what I think you'll see next year is if Medvedev is 5 this year or 4 this year at the end of the year, I think you're going to see him be 2 or 3 next year. And I think for sure he's going to win a slam next year. And, you know, there's a lot of that, you know, oh, your second year that you're out there, everyone's going to know how to play you. No one knows how to play Medvedev yet. What you have to do is what Nadal did and or what Kyrgios did in Washington, and that is just completely blow him off the court, or you have to go toe-to-toe with him. And so far, only guy who can go toe-to-toe with him is Nadal. And the two people who have blown him off the court this summer on the hard court are Nadal and Kyrgios. And so these are very bad options. And so what that tells me is that, okay, when someone's winning 24 or so matches on a hard court and losing 3, okay, you know, it has to be something exceptional. So I think he's only going to get better. I think it's a fine adjustments in the game and when to use those adjustments. And I think he's already very cerebral and very good at his tactical adjustments. I think he just needs one more little notch of experience. and put himself in those positions over and over again, and good things are going to happen.
Okay. I love what you said about he's not an easy guy to beat based on what people have had to do to beat him this summer. That's a fantastic point, because Rafa beat him twice and then Kyrgios beat him once. And, I mean, those, like you said, are not good options, because you have to red line and how many guys can do that, right? And or be a guy like Nadal, who is now a 19-time Grand Slam champion. There's not too many of those guys around, right? There's two or three of those guys, and we'll get to that in a second. But, yeah, so it's going to be very interesting, I think, 2020. Hopefully we see some more diversity on the men's side, because it's starting to get there for sure. So, Parsa, before we close off, we got this, and then we'll just do a quick fall preview. What do you think this does for the GOAT debate? Because now we got Nadal at 20, Nadal at 19, Fed at 20, Djokovic at 16. Next year, right now, you got to probably put Djokovic definitely the favorite to win Australia again. You got to put Nadal the favorite to win the French. Let's not worry about Wimbledon and the U.S. Open yet. If that happens, Djokovic, by the end of January, he'll have 17. And beginning of June, Nadal will have 20. So Nadal and Federer both at 20, Djokovic at 17. Okay? For argument's sake, let's say that's the way it is. What happens if Djokovic and Nadal leapfrog Fed and they have more than 20, like 21, 22, Federer's the third guy? And what happens at the end of all of this if all three of them have 20? What would happen then? Who's your GOAT? You have three GOATs? What's your call on that?
I mean, my GOAT, I feel like, is going to be Rafa Nadal in the end, when all is said and done. And the reason is because there's a consistency over a time frame. You know, what was the stat, Nima? Like over 30, he's won 5 slams now or something? Is that right?
I think he's got at least 4, so, if not 5.
Yeah. You know, so there's a consistency. This kid was around from, 16 years old, 17 years old, all the way to where he is now. And I think he still has, as long as he remains healthy, and I think he still has a couple of years left in him. He's only 34 years old. And so I think your athletic prime, if you take care of your body, is still about 36. So I think he's got another one or two French Opens in him, and then maybe one other slam at another place. That's a total of 3 slams, and every slam he wins, he pulls himself away from Djokovic, and I think Federer's really not going to do it. He had those match points at Wimbledon. That was his time. That was it right there. That was what he needed to do. And maybe if he wins and he converts that match, maybe he has enough juice and ammo and adrenaline to steal another one in the next year or two.
Exactly.
I'm not quite sure. I think that was it for him. So it comes down to Djokovic, and Djokovic is showing signs of wear and tear. Elbows and shoulders, and these are all injuries that, he's not a big guy. He's a slight guy. So the punishment that he takes in order to win at his certain style of play, he's going to get a lot of these injuries. His joints aren't huge. And so there's a lot of pressure on his tendons, on his ligaments and things like that. And, Nadal's a bigger guy. He looks like a soccer player, even bigger than a soccer player. And I think that's helping him. He's not moving as well as he used to, but he's anticipating much better. And because he used to move so well, he used to stand so far behind the baseline. Now he's really converted his game to be closer to the baseline, and it's showing its effectiveness. And until there's someone who can consistently blast the ball through him, which it's harder on these slower condition type courts, it'll be sort of unknown until we see the end of Nadal. I mean, I've always thought it was going to be injury that would be the end of Nadal, and somehow he's avoided that with great scheduling and lots of vacation time and taking care of his body in a different way. He's clearly kept the injury bug at bay, and at his age, he's going to continue to do that and to try to maximize his longevity on the court. I mean, we didn't even see tape on his knees, Nima.
No.
At this tournament, that's unbelievable. So
yeah,
that's what I've got.
I mean, listen, he really knocked the last few months out of the park, right? He pulls it right together before the French, wins Rome, even though he had a, prior to that, had a very disappointing clay court season, wins the French. I don't think he played a tune-up, I don't believe, coming in. And then he made semis of Wimbledon, lost to Federer, not a bad result. You know, Fed's obviously a better grass court player, no question. Wins Montreal convincingly, takes off Cincy, goes on vacation, gets to New York nice and early, just ripping the ball, feeling really good. The draw definitely opened up for him with Joker and RF falling out. Takes advantage of it, plays some great tennis, and then, you know, pulls it together against Medvedev after being up two sets to love, because that's really hard too. People don't talk about that. Like, when you're up and you have to come back from being up, that's also very difficult, right? Because you think you got it locked down, and then you don't. So, I mean, Rafa, listen, he's just, the guy is a warrior. I mean, this is a guy who's, like I said, serving bigger this tournament, hitting the ball more off the rise, backhands down the line, forehands inside out, volleying really well. Like you say, he looks fit. And he didn't look like, I know he's playing the Laver Cup. He might pull out. I don't know what he's doing there, but it looks like he's definitely going to play there. I would definitely play probably one tournament in Asia, maybe not play Paris, play World Tour Finals, and then just wrap it up. Even if you don't get the number one ranking, I know you get a ton more money from your sponsors, and it's amazing to end the year number one. He's, by the way, Parsley, he's 2,000 points ahead of Djokovic right now, basically. So Joker, and you know what? How many points Nadal has to defend for the rest of the year? Zero. You know how many points Djokovic has to defend for the rest of the year? 2,600. So that's another thing. So anything that he plays, if he can get, let's say, about 400 points, he's going to have a good chance of probably finishing number one, because he's got two slams. Djokovic has two slams, and Djokovic has a lot to defend. You know, we know historically...
It sounds like to me that he's going to be number one, but we'll see.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, so I think... And then in the GOAT debate, I mean, I still have to go with Djokovic. I know you're talking about everything that you're talking about, but this guy, he's bounced back too. And I mean, you know, he won two slams this year, three slams last year. Like, how bad of a year is Djokovic going to have next year, Parsa? You're telling me he's not going to win at least one or two slams? I don't know. I would say that he is. Now, if he doesn't, he's still, for me, the favorite in Australia, because Nadal hasn't won there since 2009. I don't think Federer is going to win the tournament. So it's Djokovic, and then who else, right? Then the French, definitely you have to pick Rafa. Wimbledon, I mean, I don't know how, like, we have, that's still a long time away. There's Olympics around that time. Next year is going to be a little bit trickier, but we'll see. And then US Open, for me, is the tournament next year that you can definitely see a new player ushered in as a Grand Slam winner. I could definitely see that happening. But the first three majors of the year, I think, are going to be occupied and won by the big three. I think at this moment, if I'm being whatever bold or being whatever, I think that Federer actually might end his career as the third GOAT. I think you're going to have Djokovic, Nadal, and then Federer. And then we'll see what happens. This is going to all get probably determined in the next 3 years. And so we can have that conversation at that time. So anyways, Parsons, before we wrap up, you know, we look forward to the fall season. What do you think, I mean, obviously, we have Asia, we have the fall. Anything you're just looking for, one quick point on anything that you, any men's or women's player or at tournament, something that you're looking for that to keep yourself busy this fall on the tennis scene.
You know, besides the Laver Cup, I you know, this Asian swing sometimes can be a little bit challenging.
Yes.
You know, it's a little bit anticlimactic too, more than anything, and. But you do look to see, you know, the one thing I always look for every fall is to see who's making a run to start off the year on the right foot. You know, and this is like you saw a couple years ago, Jack Sock won Paris, and then he just catapulted into you know, the top 10 in the world. And it was like this, you know, this dramatic thing. And it happens quite often where someone makes a run at the very end. You know, you never know. You can see one of these big serving guys, you know, making a run at it and sort of making a ton of noise. You know, where's Kevin Anderson been, for example? You know,
he's done
a guy
for the year
who can do a lot better. You know, and he's been injured and things like that. But, you know, if he's healthy, you look for him to sort of reassert himself into the mix.
He's actually back the year, though. He's done.
Oh, there you go. So I guess he won't be there because he's not going to play. So that's going to be very difficult. But so someone like him or like his story, you know, who's the next guy going to be? Like, we just saw Tommy Paul just enter the top 100 in the world. You know, he's a very good young American player. Is he a Grand Slam champion? No. You know, will Kyrgios start to take it a little bit more seriously? You know, how this is all going to end up? Will Serena play more, to be honest with you and frank with you? Will Federer start to accumulate points here in the indoor season to keep himself in the mix in the top four in the world? Because we got Medvedev entering, and this could start to push Federer down into the regular 5-6 slot. I mean, that'd be kind of strange. So there are those types of storylines that I'm looking at to see how the setup is for 2020.
Okay. So this is a couple things I'm looking for. How much I think Serena's also done for the year. I don't think you're going to see her anymore. It's going to be interesting for me to see what Fed does, because he historically plays well at this time of the season. Same with Djokovic. Looks like he said he's playing Beijing or Tokyo, so he's going to be around. See how much Nadal plays. I think a lot of these guys are going to take it easy relatively, and they deserve to do so. Let's see what Andreescu does, because she's also proven that she can take a lot of time off and come back and play stunning tennis. So does she continue to do that? Does she continue to keep that vibe going? And I think, what does Medvedev do? Because he's still hot, and he's got that kind of robotic personality, right? So he's like, okay, let's get down to Asia. Maybe I'll win Shanghai, whatever. You know what I mean? That's probably how he's looking at it, right? Even though it's a Masters 1000 and all of this stuff, 1,000 points, $1,000,000, he's like, okay, let's go win that tournament. And how can you not maybe favor somebody like him on that surface? Nice, quick court. He's got a really good serve. So we'll see what happens. But I think for me, it's how much do the top players play? Does somebody like, you know, Amanda Anisimova, after losing her father, not playing the U.S. Open? I know she's back training again. She looks happy, thankfully. Does she come back and have a nice run? Would be fantastic to see. Because obviously the hardcore tennis fans are what are engaged now. You know, the general, you know, populace is, you know, shifting gears to the NFL and, you know, college football, and NBA is coming up, and all the NHL. So it's not really, World Series is coming up in next month. So I think that's kind of what's happening. But needless to say, we'll be around. Parsa and I will always be around following. And we'll be back sometime in the fall. We don't know exactly when, to probably, you know, look at some of the developing storylines on the tour. I'd like to say, Parsa, thank you so much for joining us today. Thanks everybody out there for listening. Make sure to follow Parsa on Twitter as well as Instagram. You can follow me on Twitter as well as Instagram, and you can follow me on my personal Instagram at On Mars as well. Enjoy the tennis this fall. Be good. And go Canada, Parsa. See you soon, guys. Bye.